Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. Well, for basketball fans in Charlotte, it is better late than never. The NBA pulled its annual All-Star game from the Queen City a few years ago because of controversy over HB2, a law passed by our legislature overruling Charlotte's non-discrimination ordinance, putting in its place a series of mandates and restrictions while also removing the ability of municipalities to put their own protections in place for LGBTQ individuals, making state law supreme in that regard. But HB2 is gone. And the NBA is back this week. The 2019 All-Star Game will be played in Charlotte. But what about LGBTQ rights? Where do they stand in North Carolina? And how are things for the trans community in this state and beyond? We spend the rest of the hour looking into that with Ames Simmons, Policy Director with Equality NC. He joins us from the studios of WUNC in Durham. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And with us by phone is Mara Kiesling, founder and executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. Thank you for joining us as well.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
So let's go back. HB2 reversed a decision by Charlotte City Council that would have mandated that businesses not discriminate against gay, lesbian, or transgender customers. But then it went further, HB2 did, stating that no municipality could have greater protections than those provided by the state, and it ended the ability of people who believed they have been discriminated against in the workplace from suing in court. That law, as we all know, was struck down and was replaced after much national negative reaction by HB 142, which is still in force. What does it do? I'll start with you, Ames.
While HB 142 did technically repeal HB2, it carried forward a lot of the really poisonous provisions that were originally in HB2. For one thing, it continues to prohibit local governments from protecting LGBTQ people in private employment and in public accommodations until December of 2020, unless the legislature acts to extend that date. And of more importance to the trans community, it continues to prohibit local governments from protecting trans people in restrooms in accordance with their gender identity in public.
So the repeal of HB2 and its replacement by HB 142 was enough to bring the NBA All-Star Game back to Charlotte, and it also had an impact on other sports leagues and entertainment enterprises, which swiftly came back to North Carolina and to Charlotte. But a number of advocacy groups say that the repeal was in name only for reasons you have just mentioned, Ames. But Mara, what's your take on this? Is 142 equally bad?
Oh, it's not equally bad to HB2, but it was all show. It was created entirely to give an excuse to folks to come back and pretend that it had been repealed. It was a pretty clever move, and by the way, it was the first bit of, while we didn't like the result, it was the first bit of competent governance in North Carolina in a couple years at that point. But it was done entirely to be able to allow the NBA to bring the All-Star Game and the NCAA to do sports events and for companies to not be as disgusted with North Carolina as they had become.
Did it actually surprise you that the NBA and some sports leagues were taken aback by HB2 and decided not to come here as a result? Was that a surprise, a shift in policy?
I don't know how Ames feels about that, but I think it was not a surprise to us. Part of why transgender people have been vulnerable to extremist right-wing governments is that they've thought that we didn't have friends and we were a small community. But we have seen corporations all over the United States really feel like it's important for them to be in locations where all of their employees are treated fairly, where they can transfer employees. You were just talking about the big bank merger. Well, there's got to be some shifting of employees around the country, and the big banks need to know that their employees they want to shift from, say, Atlanta to Charlotte are going to be as safe in Charlotte as they are in Atlanta. And we've been seeing that trend over the last 15 years. And so big business wasn't a surprise at all. And, you know, the sports leagues, in particular the NBA, have become much more responsible citizens.
So, so given the fact that it's not a clean repeal, 142 is not a clean repeal of HB2, and there are still things that are missing in 142 in terms of protections for transgender persons and also for LGBTQ people in general. Why do you think the NBA and sports leagues and entertainment events saw it as a way to get back in to North Carolina, Ames?
Well, we respect the position that many of these sports leagues and businesses took to either, you know, leave our state or to not locate to our state. And we also understand their decision to return. And honestly, it's better for the LGBTQ community in general to have strong allies that speak with us and on our behalf than it was to have businesses that were boycotting the state, which ultimately hurts LGBTQ people who might have been employed in many of those businesses. I think what we would like to see is more businesses talking about the human cost of discrimination against the LGBTQ community, and particularly the human cost of dehumanizing trans people in the way that HB2 did, as opposed to simply talking about economics and dollars.
What has changed in Charlotte, in North Carolina, for transgender people from the way things were before HB2 was passed, repealed, and replaced by HB 142. Are things worse today for LGBTQ people in North Carolina and in Charlotte before Charlotte passed the ordinance that led to HB2?
Well, according to a survey that Mara's organization did in 2015, it's the U.S. Trans Survey, the largest survey of trans people, the experiences of trans people in our country, even before HB2. Two-thirds of trans folks in North Carolina were avoiding public restrooms out of fear of confrontation. And that situation hasn't improved as a result of HB2. It's gotten worse. And the fake repeal of HB2 has also not done anything to assuage the fear of trans people. I know trans students that are scared to use the restrooms in their school, that are going home at lunch in order to use the restrooms, and that doesn't ultimately provide for the best education environment.
Well, things aren't. I'm hearing you say that things aren't better. Are they worse, Mara?
Well, I don't know if they're worse. The HB2 fight overall was in certain ways empowering for trans people, but you need to remember what happened in 2016 is that the state government came after children and came after transgender adults and caused dramatic amounts of trauma for folks who realized their state government wanted to marginalize them out of existence. Now, I know that sounds extreme, but that's really how people felt. You know, Ames and I both know people who stopped going to movies, for instance, for fear that they might have to use the restroom. That sounds like a little thing until you realize you can't be a full member of society. And if you can't feel safe using the bathroom at school, you can't be a student. And if you don't feel safe using the bathroom at work, you can't have a job. And that's going to take a long time for people to get over, and to get over that their government just viciously came after them for no substantive reason.
So HB 142 does protect, or prevent rather, municipalities from enacting their own non-discrimination ordinances until December of 2020. That's just a year away. Are you aware of, or are you working with municipalities on a non-discriminatory provisions that would come into play in 2020? Or do you think that the legislature will extend that prohibition beyond 2020 when we get closer to that date? Ames?
It's hard to say. The legislative environment is different now. Since the supermajorities of the Republican Party were broken in the last election. And so that theoretically leaves more space for more positive legislation affecting the LGBTQ community, but I also think that many of the legislators are scared to pass anything that has anything to do with the LGBTQ community out of fear of drawing protests from either the right or the left. So they're, in addition to trying to do what we can to limit HB 142, we need to also be finding other ways to address violence in the community.
Ames Simmons is Policy Director for Equality NC. He is with us along with Mara Kiesling, Founder and Executive Director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Ames Simmons joins us from the studios of WUNC in Chapel, in Durham, rather, excuse me, a policy director of Equality NC. Mara Kiesling is with us by phone, founder and executive director of the National Center for Transgender Equality. The NBA All-Star Game is in Charlotte after having been pulled because of HB2. HB2 is gone. The game is back. But what has really changed for transgender individuals and for the LGBT community here in Charlotte, in North Carolina, and around the country? People tended to focus on bathrooms when talking about HB2, particularly nationally. It was so much more than bathrooms and locker rooms. But in agreeing to bring the All-Star Game to Charlotte, the NBA mandated that all restrooms used for All-Star Game activities, including those at event sites, hotels, and businesses involved with the All-Star Game, quote, will be open for use by all individuals consistent with their gender identities. Isn't that what the transgender community wants at all times, Mara?
Well, I think what we want is the ability to be full members of society, to walk about safely, knowing we can do our business, go about our business, and mind our own business. So, yes, in the context of the NBA All-Star Game, that's really great. That's really how it should be all of the time. Kids shouldn't be challenged in school about their identity every time they have to use the bathroom. It's great what the NBA is doing for this particular event.
So in October of last year, federal judge Thomas Schroeder found evidence that transgender plaintiffs are being harmed by this new law, HB 142's prohibition on new local anti-discrimination laws. But he rejected the argument that uncertainty created by the current law effectively discriminates against transgender people. Do you understand his reasoning, Ames?
I think what Judge Schroeder said in that portion of the ruling was actually very helpful to trans people. Judge Schroeder said the reason why he felt like there was no vagueness about it was that it was obvious that HB 142 could not be used to prevent or deter trans people from using restrooms in accordance with their gender identity. And I think it's very helpful to have a federal judge saying that.
Is his ruling being stuck with? In other words, you can use any bathroom you want that conforms with your gender identity, according to his interpretation of that law. Is that being carried out in the real world?
I think there's a little nuance. This is not our lawsuit, but I will add that Judge Schroeder simply said that that HB 142 could not be construed to prevent trans people from using the restrooms, which is a different proposition from saying that trans people affirmatively have the right to use restrooms in accordance with their gender identity. And I think that it still remains important for municipalities to be able to protect trans people in that way, which they cannot.
We, North Carolina, experienced the white hot spotlight on the HB2 issue and on how it affects transgender people when it was the law of the state. Are we an outlier in this? In other words, do other states allow local areas to draft their own non-discrimination policies? Are there much better LGBTQ protections in other states than there are here? Are there worse states than North Carolina from your point of view, Mara?
Yeah, there are much better states. To answer those questions in a row, so first of all, the state doesn't preempt local laws. in almost anywhere. So, for instance, in Pennsylvania, I believe there are 45 or 48 by now municipalities that have local laws, despite there not being a state law. It's the same thing in Florida, Michigan.
And in those places where there are local protections in place, where the state government allows municipalities to make their own decisions about this, what has been the result?
The result is people living their lives in a fair and responsible way. There's been none of the problems that everybody's claimed about, none of the problems in restrooms. Everything everybody said would be a problem, first of all, doesn't really happen, and second of all, is illegal in a bunch of other ways anyway. The real way in which North Carolina was an outlier here, we were starting to see national extremist groups that the Southern Poverty Law Center says hate groups push these laws on a lot of state legislatures. It started maybe in 2013, and it hit its crescendo with the passage of this law. HB2 was the first one that passed. And now when you talk to state legislators or governors in other states, they say, we don't want to get North Carolina'd, or we don't want to North Carolina ourselves. Hmm. North Carolina really became kind of a governance laughing stock and a story to be avoided. And it still is the only state where such a law has been passed. It's the only state in 2016 where an incumbent governor lost re-election. And I think there's a big warning there for other states.
In addition to North Carolina and some other states trying to remove transgender protections, it's happening at the national level as well. The Trump administration was working on establishing a legal definition of gender under Title IX, which bans discrimination on the basis of gender at educational institutions that receive federal money. According to the New York Times, the administration would define gender as a biological, immutable condition determined by genitalia at birth. Where does that stand right now, Mara?
We're not actually sure. I mean, we know that the White House leaked that to the New York Times to, I guess, trial balloon it. We're monitoring it really closely. We know that there's tremendous animus in the administration towards transgender people and LGBT people. But that just flies in the face of what science knows, what medicine knows, and what decent people know. They want to be able to define sex without talking about transgender people. And that probably to most listeners seems possible and reasonable, except if you think about it, you really can't define transgender people without using sex. Sex discrimination laws protect us because for instance, in the Title IX context in schools, if you discriminate against a student because they are transgender, It simply is because of their sex. It's because you think they are not male or not female or not male enough or the wrong kind of female. It is just on its face sex discrimination. And you can contort the law, I suppose, if you're the federal government, but we're going to win that argument in the long run.
Well, the Trump administration's Department of Health and Human Services Administration was spearheading this effort, and they say that the definition of gender should be, quote, grounded in science. They say gender is unchangeable. Those in the LGBTQ community view gender as fluid. What does science say about this, Ames?
We know that there's a large spectrum of different gender identities, even when babies are born. The way that they look on the outside doesn't tell us the whole story about what their gender identity is going to be. And sometimes doctors guess wrong about the way that trans people's brains are hardwired to understand our gender identity. So the idea that fluidity is somehow a fiction of trans people's imagination, and that there is some kind of quote unquote real science that can establish certainty about gender, that is actually junk science.
Is this another example of deliberately ignoring what science has to say because it doesn't equate to what you want to believe?
I think it's like many things that the Trump administration puts out. They're just based on instilling fear in communities and not based on any actual facts or any, lawmaking processes.
And you have said, Ames, that public discourse in North Carolina around HB2 enabled or emboldened a lot of people to talk about trans people in a dehumanizing way that they might not have otherwise felt was socially acceptable to give voice to. This seems to be happening on a lot of fronts, not just this one. What's been the impact of that? And what has been the impact of these discussions within the Trump administration with defining gender in a certain way and also prohibiting or trying to prohibit transgender individuals from serving openly in the military?
Well, I think I would hold up the resilience of trans people. If there's one thing that we have figured out from the onslaught of attacks from our state government as well as our federal government, it is that trans people are one of several communities that the government is seeking to dehumanize and to relegate into the shadows of society. And there's a long history of grassroots organizing in North Carolina that was here before HB2 passed, and that continues on in the moral movement. We just had the historic thousands on Jones Street, a huge march from the North Carolina NAACP. And I think that, we will continue to draw on that resilience and strength.
You used the word moral, so let me ask you about that. And let me ask both of you about that. Both sides on this divide see this as a moral issue, and they view morality from polar opposite points of view. Like so many other things in our society today, is there any room for compromise here? Mara?
Well, I think when people get into moral camps, it becomes harder to compromise. But what's not compromisable is our humanity. What's not compromisable is the safety of transgender children. If you come at us with false claims, Trump administration claiming that they're going to do something based on science is pretty rich. But you come at us with false claims, and then try to cover that up with morality. That's not compromisable. But if you get to know transgender people and understand how we're in every family and we're in your workplace and we're in your town, you'll get to know us and you'll see that we're just regular folks in 99% of the ways that people can be regular folks. I have to pay my rent. I walk my dog. I'm really not that much different than the mayor of Charlotte, for instance.
Yeah, your organization, the National Center for Transgender Equality, says this attempt by the Trump administration allows for the effective abandonment of a transgender person's right to equal access to health care, to housing, to education, and fair treatment under the law. I'm not sure a lot of people understand how that could be so. Explain that.
Well, part of what would happen at the Department of Health and Human Services is they would want to say that the anti-discrimination provisions of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare don't cover transgender people. So what they are saying is they are going out of their way to say it is okay to discriminate in the provision of health care to trans people. It is not illegal, they would say, for an ambulance driver to say, I don't want to pick you up, for an emergency room physician to say, yuck, I don't want to work on this kind of person. Now, whether or not that should be illegal or not, and I of course think it should be illegal, that you would go out of your way to strip that kind of law from that kind of protection from somebody in what would be their weakest, hardest moment when they really needed help. That is that can't be anything but politically motivated. It simply is not a moral question on the other side. I cannot believe anybody would ever come out and say, we believe that doctors have a right to just let someone die. But that's the effect of the argument they're trying to make.
So we have about 2 minutes left, but last month the U.S. Supreme Court lifted nationwide injunctions against the Trump administration's policy barring people considering transitioning to a different gender from serving in the military, and you have called that court's decision, Mara, an attack on transgender people around the nation. Is that how transgender people feel in general, under attack?
Yeah, the military has always been a place where society commingles and has desegregated sooner in a lot of different ways with Native Americans, with Black Americans, and et cetera. And it's a way for many people to show how they feel about America and how they support America and what they feel about their societal responsibilities. If you don't let people have full responsibilities of citizenship, you can say they don't deserve the full privileges of citizenship. That seems to be this actually seems to be about a petulant president just capriciously tweeting.
So in the 30 seconds we have left, Ames, Charlotte felt unjustly punished by the NBA when they yanked the All-Star game several years ago after HB2. City felt it was trying to do the right thing. It was the state that was doing the wrong thing. Does the NBA returning the games to Charlotte send the wrong message that everything in North Carolina is all right? Or does it allow for more conversation about transgender rights?
I think it's incumbent on the NBA to make sure that they're talking about trans rights when they come to our state, and they would do well to have members of the community who are most affected by this law talking about it alongside them.
Are they doing that?
They have not reached out that I know of.
Okay. Ames Simmons is the policy director of Equality NC. He joined us from the studios of WUNC in Durham, and joining us by phone from Washington, Mara Kiesling, founder and executive director for the National Center for Transgender Equality. Thank you both for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.